But I got another one. She want to come and say hi. This is Zofia. Come here, girl. Say what's up. Say what's up. Say what's up. Say what's up. Say hi.
Hi.
Yeah, she too shy. And you got Isadora Slaughter, MC Isadora. You want to say what's up? You've been talking all day. Say what's up. Yes, right on cue. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, it ain't the Ball family. It's the Slaughterhouse family. Slaughterhouse 5 in the building. That's what we do. DJ Wicked. We want to thank DJ Wicked, Kirk. You know, I don't like to always call MCs and DJs by their name unless they got a dope name. We want to thank Kirk, a.k.a. DJ Wicked, for coming through. That's my tech. Hey, this is K-Boo Radio 90.7. Voices from the Edge. Hey, we'll be back next week, keeping it extra poetic justice justified for you. Hey, Voices from the Edge, this is K-Boo Radio. Hey, have a beautiful day. I hope you had an eclipsing week. And we're going to make sure we see you next week. Hey, have a good day. Goodbye.
K-Boo Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at Kennedy Violins in Vancouver. His stage show, An Evening with Dan Levinson, is an intimate evening of musical conversation that combines old-time fiddle, Appalachian banjo, stories and song in a storytelling format to tell the story of life in rural Appalachia and life on the road. Again, that's An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at 4 p.m. at Kennedy Violins, 508 Southeast 117th Avenue in Vancouver. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Thank you for joining me for our national anthem. This is Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Well, the number to call here is 503-231-8187 as we celebrate the fact that 67 fascist rallies across the country have been canceled after the massive showing in Boston. And I'll just go to headlines now. And then I'll be back to more in-depth discussions, hopefully, with you. Once again, that number 503-231-8187. Tropical Storm Harvey is here. Here's the discussion from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Data from an Air Force Hurricane Hunter aircraft indicate that data that Harvey is quickly strengthening. And the cyclone's structure has improved markedly, with the plane reporting a closed 15 to 20 nautical mile wide eye. The flight level and upper wind support, an intensity of 55 knots, but one of the more notable measures is the central pressure, which has fallen to 982 millibars. With pressure this low, it is likely that the winds will respond and increase further, and Harvey probably isn't too far from becoming a hurricane. So a major hurricane approaching, possibly approaching Texas. Give you a bit more from NOAA, with Harvey now strengthening at a faster rate than indicated in previous advisories. The intensity forecast has become quite concerning. Water vapor images indicate that the cyclone's outflow is expanding, indicative of low shear. And when they say low shear, they mean that the winds that overtop it are not blowing it apart. So it's going to strengthen in its whirliness. It's a scientific term there, not. But they say Harvey will be moving over a warm eddy of high oceanic heat content in the western Gulf of Mexico in about 2 hours. And again, speaking for myself, if you look at the NOAA models, that's about 31, 32 degrees centigrade, getting around 90 degrees in the water. I mean, have you ever been in the ever been in the Gulf when it's that warm? It's kind of, you know, the Gulf of Mexico is warm water, but 90 degrees, holy. And so this is what they're saying is this could be a big hurricane. Of course, they don't say that quite in exactly that way. They say, as a result of these conditions, several intensity models, including the intensity consensus, are now explicitly showing Harvey reaching major hurricane intensity. What's more astounding is that some of the rapid intensification indices are incredibly high. As an example, the guidance is indicating a 70% chance of Harvey's winds increasing by 45 knots over the next 36 hours based on this guidance. The National Hurricane Center official intensity forecast now calls for Harvey to reach major that's like a hurricane. It's a hurricane, it blows your hair. Major hurricane strength by 36 hours before it reaches the middle Texas coast. Aircraft fixes indicate that Harvey has turned towards the north-northwest. And I'll skip ahead. It is critical that users not focus on the exact forecast track of Harvey, since cycle-to-cycle adjustments are likely. All locations within the hurricane and storm surge warning areas should be preparing for the possibility of major hurricane force winds and life-threatening storm surge. So that's for Texas and nearby regions. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. If you were unfortunate enough to turn on a television or to search news on your device, then you probably saw the President of the United States going blah, blah, blah. And what a pain that's getting to be, huh? Just to hear him say anything, because you know he's going to say something horrible. I really interpret it in my mind as, hi there, my name is President of the United States. The system is utterly corrupt, and I am the proof. Every time he opens his mouth. Hi there, I am President of the United States. The system is utterly corrupt, and I am the proof. Well, from the Los Angeles Blade, the White House is giving the Pentagon 6 months to ban transgender people. And maybe you noticed that Trump came out and said that bigotry was bad. This is obviously his shtick now. He talks out of both sides of his mouth, so everyone has something to look at. Kind of depends on who he's talking to, of course. And then he blows that dog whistle just as hard as he can, because he knows who his core troops are, about 30 million fascist Americans. And 60 million racist Americans, including those 30 million fascists, and that's a pretty good core. Let me tell you, that's a very strong core for the chief fascist. Anyway, the article says White House guidance on transgender military service ban, the transgender military service ban that President Trump ordered via tweet on July 26th is headed to the Pentagon as soon as Thursday afternoon or possibly Friday morning, according to a senior White House source. Telling the Los Angeles Blade, the guidance has been boiled down to a 2.5-page memo that directs Defense Secretary Mattis to come up with a policy in 6 months to stop spending money on transgender-related medical treatment for active duty trans service members and gauge fitness for service based on deployability, whether the trans individual can ably serve in a war zone and engage in military exercises or function in a ship for months. Quoting Lieutenant Colonel Paul Haverstick of the Pentagon, the Department of Defense will provide an update upon receipt of formal guidance. The department continues to focus on our mission of defending our nation and ongoing operations against our foes, while ensuring all service members are treated with respect, end quote. And, of course, speaking for myself, you can scarcely manage to treat all service members with respect when a demographic section of them, however small, has been singled out as inadequate, inferior, damaging. Anyway, that guidance, they write, was also watered down from the complete ban Trump ordered to one that would allow active duty trans service members to continue serving even after Republicans opposed the policy change. The weakened policy requires that recruitment and the accessions policy be halted. They are now. Enlistment contracts not be renewed. Promotions result in discharges, and transgender-specific health care be prohibited. At an August 14th news conference, Mattis indicated support for trans service members, noting the United States Armed Forces is, quote, a widely diverse force. We look at e pluribus unum on our coins, out of many one. They're simply emphasizing on the battlefield we are one team and that's the way we stay, end quote. It has now been widely reported that Mattis quietly intervened to scotch efforts by anti-LGBT representatives Duncan Hunter and Vicky Hartzler to get a version of the trans ban passed through Congress, nor did he object when Marine Corps General Joseph Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, said the current policy of open service would remain in effect until it is formally replaced, or when Navy Secretary Spencer said any patriot should be allowed to serve, echoing other commanders supporting their trans service members. However, Mattis also noted that the military chain of command requires him to follow orders given by the civilian commander-in-chief. Quoting Mattis, you all elected, the American people elected the commander-in-chief. They didn't elect me. So the commander-in-chief in our country and our system of government is elected by the people. He has that authority and responsibility, so that was fully within his responsibility, end quote. Mattis flagged that he expected the guidance very soon. After which, quote, we will study it and come up with what the policy should be, end quote. So there's much more to that article, which I believe was in the Blade. Let me just double check on that. Los Angeles Blade, yes.com. So I'm going to skip ahead and read that. Trump's fear of his evangelical base is more powerful than his promises to the LGBT community. And he has been justifying the ban by saying, quote, it's been a very difficult situation, and I think I'm doing a lot of people a favor by coming out and just saying it. As you know, it's been a very complicated issue for the military. It's been a very confusing issue for the military, and I think I'm doing the military a great favor, end quote. They write, fact check. An estimated 6,000 trans service members have been serving openly without incident since the original ban was lifted by then Defense Secretary Ash Carter in July 2016 after a year of study and deliberation. News of the ban prompted California Legislative LGBT Caucus to introduce a resolution saying California would protect its own trans service members. And as I say, there's much more to that article. It's a pretty long article in the Los Angeles Blade. So you can check that out. It's 12 minutes after. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I am Teresa Mitchell, proudly transgender. And I think it's pretty ironic that I'm talking about protecting service members within the military, which is used for imperial slaughter, which is used in the most immoral and damaging way, which is the top polluter in the planet, a military which needs to be mostly shut down. I would be very glad to see a 90% reduction in American armed forces, and that would simply be a retraction of imperialism, a retraction from the immoral, hateful, racist idea that it's okay for white Americans to rule the world. And you can pretend that it's not just white Americans, but it comes out of whiteness. It comes out of the base of this nation, what this nation is about, how it was created, invasion, genocide on the basis of whiteness. the kidnapping of Africa on the basis of whiteness, the suppression of any action based on history on the basis of whiteness, and imperialism as we see it now, comes out of this dynamic. And so we have to, if we're going to have a revolution, we have to examine and deconstruct and destroy whiteness. Whiteness, the chump change that is given out to white people. You can't have education, you can't have health care, you can't have housing. You'll be desperate for all of your life. But here, we'll stack you a little bit ahead of everyone else, white people. There you go. Yeah, now you're superior. You falling for that? Well, me either, so let's destroy whiteness. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Whiteness is a ripoff for everyone, and it's a ripoff for white people, too. Well, I have good news and bad news on climate. First, the good news. An industry newsletter says solar power is moving so quickly that it's set to surpass nuclear power this year. Quoting Green Tech Media, even with a 4-gigawatt downward adjustment in projected installations, it's still going to be a record-breaking year for new solar capacity additions yet again. The 81 gigawatts expected this year are more than double the amount of solar capacity installed in 2014, and it's 32 times more solar deployed than a decade ago. In the year 2000, global installations totaled 150 megawatts. Now it's much, much larger. One of the most telling statistics, by 2022, global capacity will likely reach 871 million watts. That's about 43 gigawatts more than expected cumulative wind installs by that date. Excuse me, 871 billion watts, gigawatts. And it's more than double today's nuclear capacity. Pardon me. In fact, by the end of 2017, solar potential voltage could rival global nuclear capacity. That's a major milestone. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Pardon me. But solar isn't generating as much as nuclear right now, partly because it's not being stored efficiently. So consider this. Pardon me just for a moment. I'm going to find this cough button. And I'm going to check with the engineer. Did the cough button work? No, it did not. Oh, the cough button doesn't work. Well, I guess everyone gets to hear my coughs then. I'll just make a little note here, and we'll see if we can fix that cough button. All right. Solar isn't generating as much as nuclear right now, partly because it's not being stored efficiently. So consider this. Big batteries aren't the only way to store electricity. There's a plurality of contenders for power storage technologies, including pumped hydro, compressed air, flywheels, and batteries. That's a quote of Donald Sadoway, an MIT materials chemist, whose research focuses on energy use and efficiency. He says, electricity storage is hugely complex and will not be satisfied by a single solution. Now, I'm quoting from an article in cleantechnica.com. They write, pumped hydropower is considered energy storage because water stored in a reservoir generates electricity when it flows out through an electric turbine. Compressed air works in the same way, generating electricity as it is released from an air tank. Flywheels capture rotational energy and a spinning mechanical device, which slows down and releases energy when power is needed. Now, this article is about Alphabet, or Google, if you like, which has created a project they're calling Malta. I'm guessing that molten alkali and antifreeze figures into that cobbled together word. Malta, which stores wind and solar power by converting electricity to thermal energy. Heat is stored in molten salt. Cold is stored in a vat of liquid antifreeze solution. When power is needed, the hot and cold energy are converted back to electricity by a heat engine. Electricity in the system is produced most efficiently when there's a wider temperature difference between the hot and cold vats. Exotic materials are often needed to maintain high temperatures, but the Malta system seems to be using common materials instead. Similar hot-cold storage technology has been developed using hot water instead of molten salt, but salt appears to be more energy efficient. So according to their source, salt-based thermal energy storage has the potential to be many times cheaper than battery storage, and because most of the materials necessary, steel tanks, salt, antifreeze, are inexpensive and abundant, the company says its Malta technology may be recharged thousands of times and last for up to 40 years, several times longer than today's batteries. So now we're getting very close to being able to store on a large scale wind and solar, and so that will hopefully put the cap on the profitability of fossil fuels. It's already been noted that solar and wind is cheaper, becoming cheaper than nuclear, and it's becoming cheaper than fossil fuels. And that is what the death knell will be when you can get your power needs met in your house, when you can get around in your car, and it's cheaper than fossil fuels, then that's what you'll do. And I have some hope for that. Now that I've given you the good news, we'll just plow into the bad news, shall we, about the climate. The Center for Biological Diversity in the Sierra Club lodged formal comments Monday with the federal government opposing a massive gas fracking project that spans 220 square miles of public land in Wyoming, south of Yellowstone National Park. That's right, they want to frack by Yellowstone. This is from the Center for Biological Diversity and includes the Sierra Club. The normally pressured Lance Gas Field would destroy wildlife habitat and worsen ozone pollution, a major cause of childhood asthma in areas already suffering from extreme air pollution. This enormous project will be a disaster for wildlife, people, and the planet. That's a quote of Diana Descalo-Jaffe, a senior attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. She said it will decimate habitat for animals that are already struggling and further foul the air in communities already suffering with pollution from drilling and fracking. And it locks us into decades more fossil fuel dependence, which will only worsen the climate crisis, end quote. In their comments to the Federal Bureau of Land Management today, the group said the project would destroy key wildlife habitat for greater sage grouse, pronghorn, and mule deer by allowing 3,500 new gas wells, roads, and other infrastructure. If it's approved by the Bureau of Land Management, drilling in the 140,000-acre gas field, which, as I said, is near Yellowstone Park, could begin next year. So that's kind of nasty, isn't it? Well, I could give you some more good news. It's not quite good news because it's not happening here in the United States. It's about Victoria, Australia. And abc.net.au writes, Victoria, Australia's ambitious renewable energy targets of 40% by 2025 will be cemented in law with legislation introduced to the state parliament to protect their future. The Andrews government is claiming the targets and investment in new projects will help reduce power bills. The government said its modeling, which it has not released yet, showed on average household power bills in Victoria, Australia, will drop $30 a year. For medium businesses, a saving of $2,500 is promised, and for larger companies, $140,000 in savings are expected. But Energy Minister Lily D'Ambrosio was unable to say when the savings would begin and how long it would last for. The renewable targets of 25% by 2020 and 40% by 2025 are being pitched by the labor faction as not only clean energy generators, but also a driver of hundreds of new regional jobs. As part of the package, the Australian government wants the sector to build 650 megawatts of green energy operation in what it calls a reverse auction. Under the scheme, the industry is asked to come forward with proposals to build renewable energy, and the project with the best value for the money in local job and procurement pitches will be awarded a contract. 650 megawatts of energy is equivalent of powering 389,000 homes, and the Australian Victoria government said that the auction was expected to stimulate up to $1.3 billion of investment and create 1,200 construction jobs over 2 years and 90 ongoing jobs. So, wouldn't it be nice if we heard about that happening in Oregon? Well, it ain't. Now I want to turn to imperialism. I found an article by Matthew Hoh, H-O-H, and Counterpunch, which summarized things rather nicely since we're getting on to 16 years in the horror in Afghanistan. And it's on that topic. And on the basis of American imperialism, whiteness, that I would like to ask for your calls at this time, what to do about imperialism. And since I'm not really calling for a sort of reform in which we simply stop the war in Afghanistan while not stopping the war in Syria and the war in the Philippines and the war on the entire world, what I'm really calling for is revolution. And I think it's irresponsible at this point to think in terms of reform, because the power base in this country has been fouled for a long time, of course. I mean, that was the basis of this country, is to restrict power from the majority. But that has been accelerating lately. And economically, we have all, I say we have all, most Americans have an edge of desperation about them. Most Americans can't come up with $4,000 for an emergency. You think about that. $4,000 for an emergency is something that's going to happen to everyone sooner or later. You're going to need a couple of root canals, or you're going to smash your car, or you'll need to move. Someone in your family or extended family will become sick. You need a pad that you can draw on for those emergencies, and you don't have it. And the reason is the distribution of wealth has been so skewed that it has created a billionaire class. And that billionaire class got its money and its power by sucking it out of the greater working class, which you are a member of. And once again, as I've said many, many times over the years on this program, please stop thinking of yourself as middle class. You're not middle class. Oh, sure, that term is useful in some demographic ways. There are classes that are in the middle. But when people say that they're middle class, what they're really saying is, oh, I'm virtuous, I work, I get a paycheck. But if you get a paycheck, you're actually working class. You depend on the paycheck. What middle class used to mean before its late 20th century, I would say, propagandistic incarnation, middle class meant someone who was, say, a well-established doctor who had paid for his or her house, could go, I believe the figure was, 3 years without another cent and not suffer even a bit in terms of income. That's middle class. That's not the ruling class. That's not the rich class, but that's middle class, and you're not that. You don't have that, by and large. And when I say you, of course, I'm talking about at least 99% of the people hearing this signal on the web and on the radio, which reminds me of something. I just checked, and I didn't really know. I knew that I've been on the air in various forms. I started doing radio in 1981 in Lubbock, Texas. I've been on the air for a long time, and I knew that the online audience was increasing and increasing. And what I found out just by asking a member of the staff is something that everyone else seems to know, and that I was kind of in the dark about, just because, well, I'm getting older, and you know, I make it, one of the things that you do is you make assumptions. And I assumed that there were more people listening to the terrestrial broadcast than you listening on your computers and various devices. And the fact is, this is an internet station. Far and away, this is an internet station that has a small transmitted component. So congratulations. Congratulations to all, because that's what we wanted. That's where we wanted to go. We wanted to make sure that we moved firmly into the 21st century and that we became a multimedia hub, and we have done it. And this is a podcast primarily. And you'll be able to hear a repeat of this podcast by pulling up Press Watch on KBOO. It's generated about 15 minutes after I go off the air. I didn't put in the proper the format this week, so you'll have to search it, but you can find it if you want to hear it again. And I'll put it up on Facebook. I'm going to get a Facebook page. I'm going to dive into this and embrace the fact that this is now an internet phenomenon. Hello, internet. As I was saying before, I want to talk about imperialism. I want to talk about the war in Afghanistan, how unsustainable it is, and how it points to our need for a revolution, because we're not going to have we're not going to just reform our way out of imperialism. That's in the woodwork now. This is what we do. in terms, I say that this radio station is now internet because that's who most of the listeners are. But if you look at where the dollars go in the United States, if you ask what the United States is and what it does, and if you follow the money, well, we do imperialism. And that's pretty ugly. And that means that it's not reformable at this point. It means that we have to have revolution. We have to stop the system. And revolution can break out suddenly, unexpectedly. It does require organization. It does require forward thinking. And it also requires forward thinking enough that you have to think how and in what manner things will proceed once the oppressor class has been overthrown. And you notice that I'm speaking in very general terms. I see that as my role here. I'm very public. I'm open. I'm right here in the studio at 20 Southeast 8th saying revolution, so I don't know any revolutionary groups personally, and I keep it that way for their safety and mine. But I will say that we do need a revolution. And this article by Matthew Ho in Counterpunch is called Counterpunching the Lies on Afghanistan. And I want to read part of it. He wrote it in anticipation of President Trump's announcements earlier this week on Afghanistan. Quoting, there has never been progress by the U.S. military in Afghanistan. Unless you are asking the U.S. military contractors or the Afghan drug barons, of whom an extremely large share are our allies in the Afghan government, militias, and security forces, there has only been suffering and destruction. American politicians, pundits, and generals will speak about progress made by the 70,000 American troops put into Afghanistan by President Obama beginning in 2009, along with the additional 30,000 European troops and 100,000 private contractors. However, the hard and awful true reality is that the war in Afghanistan has only escalated since 2009, never stabilizing or de-escalating. The Taliban has increased in strength by tens of thousands, despite tens of thousands of casualties and prisoners, and American and Afghan casualties have continued to grow every year of the conflict, with U.S. casualties declining only when U.S. forces have begun to withdraw in mass numbers from parts of Afghanistan in 2011, while Afghan security forces and civilians have experienced record casualties every year since those numbers began to be kept by the U.N. Similarly, any progress in reconstructing or developing Afghanistan has been found to be near non-existent, despite the more than $100 billion spent by the United States on such efforts by the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction. $100 billion, by the way, is much more money than was spent on the Marshall Plan when that post-World War II reconstruction plan is put into inflation-adjusted dollars. Oft-repeated claims, such as millions of Afghan schoolgirls going to school, millions of Afghans having access to improved health care, and Afghan life expectancy dramatically increasing, and the construction of an Afghan job-building economy, have been exposed as nothing more than public relations lies. Displayed as modern Potemkin villages to visiting journalists and congressional delegations and utilized to justify continued budgets for the Pentagon and USAID and so to allow for more killing, like America's reconstruction program in Iraq, the reconstruction program in Afghanistan has proven to be a failure and its supposed achievements shown to be virtually non-existent, as documented by multiple investigations by the Special Inspector General for Afghan reconstruction, as well as by investigators and researchers from organizations such as the UN, the EU, the IMF, the World Bank, etc. Number to call with your comments and questions: how to take down imperialism, how to move towards revolution, what a revolution would look like, what you want out of revolution. 503-231-8187. It's 9:32, and Sean is on the air.
Yes, hi. I think you're in complete la-la land with the calls for revolution. We're now in a situation very similar to the end of the imperial period of the Roman Empire, where the plutocrats are now in charge and the generals are going to be the next phase. They're going to crush anything that smacks of a revolution. This is not the 19th century France. It's not early 20th century Russia. There is not going to be a revolution. It's just going to get a lot of people slaughtered. People need to adjust to the fact that you're living in an empire. And what we have is an elected imperial presidency, and try and work within the system as best you can, because revolutions are simply not going to work.
Well, I am calling for a sacrifice and
the risk of sacrifice.
Death.
It's stupid. I went through the whole
thing. Well, what have you got to say about it more than you think that it's stupid? I mean, obviously we have a difference of opinion here.
Well, I have to say is that you're advocating an impossibility.
No, it's not impossible. And, it's happened over and over. People said it was impossible in Russia. Certainly the power bases in Russia had a revolution
and it led to the slaughter of millions and millions and millions of people. So
it wasn't the revolution that led to that. It was the betrayal of the revolution that led to that.
Well,
so you
know,
just
give
up?
This is all stuff that's been debated. You know, my father was an original member of the Communist Party in the United States, and America is very naive about the blood that gets spilled in Eurasia, and the people play at revolution here. The situation is really not bad enough. People are not starving. They're not calling for bread and land. Their people are suffering in various ways, but they're suffering at a very high level, if you'll pardon it.
I see people living on sidewalks. I mean, just a few blocks from here, I see people living on sidewalks. And it's true,
I understand all of that, and that all could be addressed, but it won't be addressed by a revolution. That's the end of my comment. Thank you.
Really? That's it? Because I say this is intolerable, and we have a moral obligation to revolution for a number of reasons. One of them is climate change. The Pentagon is the world's largest polluter. It can say what it likes, but it continues to pollute and increase its pollution. And if we are to survive on this planet, then we must shut down the Pentagon and its actions and shut down imperialism. And I did rather expect to hear someone say basically what you have said. I'm sorry I have to continue addressing you because you've hung up on me, but it's time for revolution. It's irresponsible not to have a revolution. And sure, the revolution might fail. The first 10 attempts might fail. It doesn't mean that we don't have an obligation to move forward rather than simply to accept this heinous, offensive, racist, fascist oppressor that now rules us. The very idea of billionaires existing while our people live on sidewalks, while our people are thrown into the jails on the basis of their skin color, is unacceptable. And so I'm Teresa Mitchell. I live here in Portland. I'm aware of what has happened historically. I've received death threats over the years from time to time. It's been a few years. Maybe I'll, be invigorated by a new one now. But I'm aware that if I call for revolution, that I may lose my liberty and my life. Dims the brakes. I am calling for sacrifice. And I want to know, what kind of world would you want to live in? What would you like the resources of the society directed to? I say that the resources of the society should be directed to reversing whiteness, reversing the destruction of the planet, moving towards greater and more informed, collaborative, transparent societies. I think we can do this. I've seen these sort of things break out, and I believe in it. I believe in people. I believe in potential. I am an anarcho-communist or anarcho-socialist. So what do you say about that? The number to call, 503-231-8187, and Phil is on the air.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you for always a great program. And I was just going to make a comment about what Bernie Sanders would say about the revolution and about how it's just asking more people to participate in how they spend their money and how they vote. And if we just had twice as many people voting, that'd be a political revolution in this country. And people talk about how it's stupid to think about a revolution, but then you look at what's happening out there in the just locally around here, and the development going on, and how you see these old rich white parts building these huge houses while you see how many people on the streets homeless. So why don't we start with taxing big large houses, taxing Wall Street, and then we can make real progress. And what's never mentioned in Afghanistan is how we've already spent $750 billion there for an army that's non-existent and for pretty much only a small little enclave in Kabul.
Oh yeah, I have some details on that for sure from this article in Counterpunch, which I very much encourage people to read.
Yeah, and then we get our resistance from the Democratic Party voting for new military budget increases and for sanctions against Russia. And so it seems now that we were coaxing the Mujahideen to fight the Russians to destabilize them, or the Soviets at the time, to destabilize the Soviet Union. And now it seems Trump's having us stay in Afghanistan with more troops. Would that mean that he's working with the Russians to destabilize the American government?
What I've found, and what's encouraging to me, is that the truth has an effect in this context of oppression and lies that is disproportionate to the effort required simply to state it. And so I've always enjoyed, I've enjoyed the power of getting behind a microphone and saying, well, this is the truth, it might be the ugly truth. You know, especially when it comes to the Afghan war. I mean, the Afghan war was started on the basis of a lie, is maintained on the basis of lies. It is, I hope to get to some details. You won't believe how corrupt it is. It is just a money sponge for the war industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at NPR, and I mean, any time you can flip on that station, you'll probably get a semi-frontal lobotomy from their ability to play both sides and talk about, you know, Rick Perry's energy analysis they're doing for renewable energies, but then how they should focus on nuclear and fossil fuels, but never mention climate change in that whole art and the whole segment.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think it needs to be brought to the personal too. I mean, when we think about what we as a people are doing and the effects on people here and overseas, I mean, if I take it directly, I mean, okay, so here I am, an American, I get around using fossil fuels. And I've accepted a sort of infantilizing position. It's like, oh, I can't, I don't have the power. Might as well not even speak out against it. I've got work to do. Fortunately, I've gotten, I've been one of the lucky ones who got through a working life, and now I'm living on a pension. So I have more time to investigate and to say the truth on the microphone and that sort of thing. But, you know, it's just like, oh, I've got to maintain what I've got, or it could get worse. And then the effect is, you know, I'm sure some of my not so distant relatives have been sent over to Afghanistan to suffer the degradation of acting on the basis of a lie, to suffer in many ways, and to create even greater suffering to people in Afghanistan who have every right to defend their country. We have this most basic right to have their own lives and their own culture and their own land being violated by Americans who shoot at them, bomb them, oppress them, sneer at them, demean them.
What's overseeing, and especially with this talk about Afghanistan, it's not there. It's seven, upwards of 10 countries that we've destabilized. And, I mean, we've run out of bombs at Syria last year, and we've had 1,000 sorties over Iraq, I believe. And so it's one of those things, but apropos of the long memory and our history, it was just the birthday of Howard Zinn, and then yesterday, I believe, was the anniversary of Sacco and Vanzetti killing by the state. And so it's a long struggle, and it's definitely about imperialism, because if we're going to let the army run, the military run roughshod over everyone and pretend that they're defending our freedoms at the same time, we're definitely fooling ourselves, because spending all the country's money, and the rich are sucking up whatever else they can get their hands on.
And it's getting worse and worse. And so it's time for revolution, because the system is unsustainable. Yeah. I mean, we will have destabilization. The question is, shall we organize and move towards a more peaceful change?
You see it exactly with how the alt-right's picking up popularity, but at the same time, the Democrats have no real platform other than this, you know, a slimy kind of better deal, which, you know, they don't commit towards $15 an hour. They don't commit towards single-payer universal health care. They don't commit towards curtailing the war budget. And so it's like, what option does the young people have nowadays other than to get angry and break things and think that's going to solve the problems, when it's really, you know, we got the older folks are just sucking up all the money and all the resources for their own embetterment and their own stroke of their egos, unfortunately, to the detriment of the youth in this country and the whole world, frankly, with climate change, and it's hard to deny it anymore now.
There is a dynamic there.
Yeah, especially when you see it with, you know, throughout the world with climate change, and you get people here who still don't believe it. There's just an article yesterday in The Guardian about how Trump's front article about how supporters of Trump think he's anti-left, anti-stupid, and whatever else they want to imagine, because they're still dying as a whole true believers. So we definitely got a dangerous segment in this country that wants to believe, frankly, whatever they want to believe.
Well, thanks for your comments.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoy your program, and it's important to tune in to independent radio more and more, and really turn off corporate media, and really, especially NPR. And any program that spends more time updating you on the stock market than on real going on in the world, you should probably change it.
All right. Thank you very much. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I've been talking about imperialism. I've been talking about climate change. And I've been saying that we have to be real and understand that the way that we have been living is unsustainable. And we need to organize. Unfortunately, in a revolution, for example, if you're looking at the Russian Revolution, when they got to the point, and I'm not talking about the so-called revolution when it became stale and became a contest with Hitler and all that sort of thing in the 30s. But after the second go in 1917, what happened is that people knew that there needed to be a change and that there were people who were organized. It was the organized people who became the leadership. They were not exactly, they were, for example, not the the sailors on the Potemkin that became the rulers. It was the people who were organized who became the power that moved forward. And it was where they were left less organized, where they lost their nerve, and we have to cop to this, the fact is the stress induced by the fact that the entire imperialist capitalist world attacked them then with the White Army. That's when things went south. But there was a moment when things really did move towards revolution. And the world has reacted to it since. Just those few things, those few moral and rational distributions of knowledge, power, and wealth are so frightening, even after 100 years, that people are very careful to intimidate, to sneer, to tell lies about, to obfuscate the fact that revolution is powerful, is needed, and is going to happen. It might not be something I see, or it might happen tomorrow. I really just don't know. I've decided that my part is to use this very powerful instrument, this now hundreds of thousands of people on the web, and a much smaller amount on the transmitter, to say, think about revolution. Just think about that, because when you think about something, when you think about what you want and where you're going, you have a better chance of getting there. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Caroline is on the air.
Hi, yeah, I hope you can hear me okay.
Yes.
Okay. I really agree with a lot of the foundations of having a revolution, and it's something that we really need to do. Although I'm not really super extremist, I could say. For example, I was a Bernie Sanders voter, and I believe we should maintain our constitution, and I mean, this is the structure of government that we have set up. But what needs to change is the way that campaign money is financed. I mean, finances are the election of our officials, the way that the people are not allowed to select who is up for election, rather it's the big campaign parties and their political leaders, those who can get the most money and the most favor from the corporations and rule. That needs to fundamentally change. We need to overturn things that allow our corporations to dictate who's even going to be our nominees, because it's really a false choice. People, our whole election system is a false choice. And then we also need systemic and industrialized changes from the ground up. The way that our legislation and laws are set up are just meant to feed this administrative bureaucracy that just runs circles around problems that they say they're trying to solve, but really actually just make things worse and funnel more money into this never-ending hole, which just feeds corporate bureaucrats and nobody else. And that fundamentally has to change.
I think these are good points.
Yeah, housing should be a human right, and minimum wage needs to increase. But I know within the housing market, if like the affordable housing market, if that structure does not change. Minimum wage can go up, but the landlords will just keep increasing the rent because the market bears it. So I think, like, for example, the real estate market, everything can stay the same as it is, except for housing, family housing needs a cap on the profit.
I think that all of this thought yeah. and all of this motion is worthwhile, because the thing is, we don't know how a revolution will start or what will be the major spark, but I do know that if you take steps, then things can happen. And I was really encouraged by the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. I've mentioned many times since last summer. I went to Philadelphia. I saw this incredible electric phenomenon on the streets. I was on the streets, and the Clinton delegates were in the hotels and just didn't come out. And there was this incredibly passionate throng in the streets for Bernie Sanders, and they were for change in all the ways that you have just mentioned, and they were a revolutionary group, and they were very terribly sad when Bernie capitulated. And I was sad to learn that Bernie wasn't going to move forward against imperialism, but that doesn't matter in the context now so much. I mean, if I had... Oh, are you still there? Oh, I guess not. Okay, well... what I was going to say about Bernie is he should be confronted over imperialism, and maybe he'll change and maybe he won't, I don't know. But he had this very mild idea of socialism, and it brought it with it the hope for greater participation, for a more rational distribution of power, wealth, and, you know, in a sense, a more rational distribution of adventure, a more rational adventure of sacrifice, a more rational distribution of all the human hopes that come with an open society, that come with what we could be. There was excitement there. There was really, really excitement there. And the Democratic Party worked so hard and with such skill and such wealth and power to utterly crush it in all ways, in every way. Inside the convention center, they would even turn out the lights on the Bernie factions so that the TV cameras couldn't pick them up as well. I mean, just anything, everything to support corporate rule and to deny the outbreak of a more just, more democratic society, because at that moment, that's what Bernie represented. Don't call me up and say Bernie is lacking. I know he is. That's what it meant at that time in those streets. And when I say we can have a revolution, oh, I felt it there last year in Philadelphia. I felt that possibility of revolution. And I can feel those sparks around the Jill Stein campaign. And I felt it in 99 in the streets in Seattle. Oh, yeah, it can happen. I know it can happen. And you can call and say, oh, it'll just result in blood spilled. Well, if it does, it will not be blood that is spilled in vain. And I would counter that, compare it with blood that is spilled in Afghanistan on behalf of the United States imperial war machine. That blood is spilled in vain. Sorry to say, I respect soldiers for all that they are, because some people are soldiers in their core, you know, but and certainly in the United States, because we encourage that. And maybe we draw in souls that want to fight in that way. I don't know. So, okay, soldiers are fine. Don't take it that way. This mission is wrong. All the imperial missions are wrong. I want to change that. That means revolution. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Ray is on the air.
Oh, hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, I think I'm calling a little bit out of time. You're talking, I was driving, so I just pulled over a bit. You're talking about energy earlier. Can I just say something about that?
Yes, please go ahead.
Oil and solar and so on. So I'm in a position where my work involves either remodel homes, and so I can either have the option sometimes to bring gas to the home if there's no gas, or electrical or whatever for heating and cooking purposes. I generally choose to leave the house electric if possible, because as far as I'm concerned, the only way we can keep getting gas is to keep fracking. So, and this is only a very small part of what you were talking about earlier, but I just wanted to put this out there and to challenge other folks that might be in the same position that I am to either choose electric or gas or whatever. Choose electric. You can renew this energy. You can convert it. And once you've got gas, you're kind of done for. That's the only way you can get it is to keep ruining what's happening already.
That's an interesting point.
That's all.
All right. All right, then. Well, and that makes me want to repeat what I've been bringing up over the last few weeks, that solar and wind is moving forward technologically and in terms of manufacturing, so that it very clearly, according to hard-headed bankers who are checking this sort of thing, is going to overtake in terms of affordability, is going to overtake fossil fuel, and is already overtaking nuclear. So there's a good sign on the horizon, and yeah, I think that you're right, that we can choose to participate in that by going for electric where we can get it, because that certainly allows different forms of generation. You still there?
Yes. I'm still here. I just wanted to also, I agree with you, and just wanted to get that out there and challenge other folks to keep to go electric if you can, if you have the option to do so. And thank you for your work, Teresa.
You're welcome. I was looking at a list of tasty, profitable things in Afghanistan that the corporate government in the U.S. wants to get, and I didn't bring it with me. It reminds me of what the U.S. really wanted in Vietnam. They said they wanted democracy and to fight against the domino theory that Stalinist-style communism was going to spread and threaten the freedoms of the people of the United States eventually. And what they really wanted, if you followed the money in Vietnam, was oil, tin, rubber, rice, and cheap labor. Oil, tin, rubber, rice, and cheap labor. Profits is what it came down to. And in Afghanistan, Afghanistan is a wonderful, wonderful money sponge for people who are inside the game. And one of the adjuncts to the article that I was reading from was reports that were actually from the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, and they are eye-openers. And so I encourage you to go to Counterpunch and pull up the article and to look at the links, which are embedded in certain words in the article, in that way. What do you call that? Chaining the link? See, I've got to get up to 21st century speed. I've got to have a Press Watch Facebook page. I've got to increase my Twitter account. At least I am on Twitter. KBU Press Watch on Twitter. Tweet me. I want to read from part of this Special Inspector General report. they asked for and received details about where all these healthcare facilities were that were paid for by billions of dollars, greater than the Marshall Plan. This tremendous, tremendous amount of money that has gone into Afghanistan, and part of it was supposed to be for health clinics, and so they gave them geospatial coordinates that they could check. And evidently, the USAID thought that they wouldn't check, but it's an inspector general, so they did. They received coordinates for 551 of 641 listed facilities. So that's pretty good, right? If you've spent all that money, at least you've got 641 health facilities in Afghanistan, right? They write, in an attempt to verify the accuracy and location data for the 551 facilities, we obtained and analyzed geospatial imagery for these locations. We found the following weaknesses in the data for 56 of those locations. 13 coordinates were not located within Afghanistan, 6 were located in Pakistan, 6 were located in Tajikistan, 1 was located in the Mediterranean Sea. Continuing, this total includes 90 facilities lacking location data, 56 facility locations that they could not analyze geospatially because they are considered erroneous or duplicated, 19 coordinates located in a different district than the one reported, 189 locations showing no building within 400 feet, 154 locations that do not clearly identify a specific building, and 2 locations that identified a specific building in our analysis of geospatial imagery but are included in enclosure 2 because they are duplicate coordinates. So in other words, if you look at the details of the actual official documents sent back and forth from the Special Inspector General to USAID, that money didn't go to healthcare facilities at all. Where did it go? It went to the comprador cartels that pop up in every imperial war. In other words, it was given to rich people. And there are no health clinics in Afghanistan. Similarly, there's another There's another letter that's just like it, in which they analyze geospatial imagery, in other words, satellite pictures, to find out where all the schools were. There are no schools. That's how corrupt the U.S. military is. The Pentagon is so corrupt that it is known to have on the order of trillions of dollars in reserves. Now, the Pentagon isn't constitutionally or organizationally given vast reserves. They're not supposed to have enough reserves to conduct a war on their own, but they do. This is the world that we live in. We are pawns. We are lied to. We are given whiteness. And we need revolution. Thanks for listening to KBOO. I saw Chris Andre just now. She's getting ready to come in at the top of the hour. We're going out to you at 90.7 FM on our transmitter and KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. It is KBOO Portland. Your Thursday morning continues at 10:15 with Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein, your host. Then at 11, it'll be Between the Covers. Today, Jake Vermas speaks to poet Lauren Kemp about her collection 100 Hungers. It tells the overlapping stories of food and ritual, immigration and adaptation, evoking Baghdad in the 1940s. And then at 11:30, the film show presents part one of their direct cinema series, featuring interviews with legendary documentary filmmakers D.A. Pennebaker, Chris Hegedus, and Albert Maisels. That is all coming up at 11:30 right here on The Boo. Stick around, though. Up next, it is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Coming up.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of Springtime Carnivore, Thursday, August 31st at McMenamin's Crystal Ballroom in Portland. Springtime Carnivore is a one-woman project led by Greta Morgan that plays fusion of sunshine pop, psychedelica, and folk rock filtered through the lens of indie rock. Again, that's Springtime Carnivore, Thursday, August 31st at 8 p.m. at McMenamin's Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.